Yeah. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Studios here in the Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, overlooking Pioneer Court on a swinging Saturday night. Full show tonight here till midnight. And at this point, I have to stay away from social media because everybody loves to start posting stuff about Saturday Night Live as they go along. Oh, this guy just made an appearance. Oh, they just did this joke. So now I have to stay away because it's on my DVR and it's my little Sunday morning treat. And so I had to change one of the televisions here in the studio from NBC to ABC.
Well, who had it on NBC?
Well, there's three television screens down here. And one of them always has NBC on.
Oh, okay.
So it's like GN, CBS, and NBC were on when I came in, and I changed NBC to ABC.
I don't know why, but I would think it would be a like one of the news channels, like CNN, might be on the TVs down there.
It's not the case.
No, okay.
Not the case. So, So I have to stay away.
I remember from the days you said DVR. I remember the days when I first started with you. It wasn't that long ago. You know, about 8 years. And remember on the first floor, you always used to give them your VHS tape to make sure they recorded.
Yeah, they would record SNL onto a VHS tape, and then they actually would record it on a DVD for me.
Oh, after that? Okay. All
yeah,
right.
So they would record it on a DVD for me.
Look at how times have changed in just 8 years.
Yeah, I've only got like 53 shows on my DVR right now.
But not SNL, all kinds of
all
shows.
All kinds of shows. Oh, okay. But SNL is on my is every Saturday night.
Yeah.
It's there.
Now,
Louis C.K. is the host tonight. So,
do you have time to watch all your shows?
Of course I do.
Oh, jeez. See, that's why I don't have cable. I don't have time.
Well, make time. That's what I do.
I don't have any time left in the day with everything. There's a film, a video competition for high school students going on right now in the area. And so I just did about 75 videos that I had to judge in short comedy narrative and public service announcements. So I got those done today. That took about 3 hours.
Well, you see, when you're doing stuff like that,
you gotta
prioritize.
I'm trying.
You gotta prioritize, man.
I'm trying.
I don't think people realize how important television is.
It's very important.
Very important.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of television, you can go on demand and watch brand new movies right now, and that's part of what the movie reviews are all about with Colin and Eric. And let's make this official. Yeah. Movie review time. This is when Colin Suter and Eric Childress join me every week to talk about all the movies we cover on demand, and we cover all the new films that were released in theaters as well. So let's welcome these guys to the show. Here's Colin. Hi, Colin.
Hello there.
And hello, Eric.
Hello.
None of us saw the Cesar Chavez movie.
No.
I'm interested in it because I really like Michael Peña.
Sure.
And I really like Rosario Dawson. Diego Luna's made some pretty interesting movies. I just didn't get a chance to see it. So if anybody saw Cesar Chavez, give us a call, 312-981-7200. You can review it for us, 312-981-7200. That's the only big movie that came out this week that none of us have seen. But we've
did they screen it?
Yes,
they did.
Yeah, they screened it. It was during when I was in South by Southwest, so that's why I didn't get to go see it.
Okay.
So it was a few weeks back.
All right. Well, if anybody saw Cesar Chavez, then give us a call at 312-981-7200. And we always start with the on demand. Eric, surprised at the Muppets underperforming?
A little. I mean, the first one opened really huge, the sort of the return of it, and then it really died off quickly. I mean, that surprised me even more. But yeah, I don't know why people are taking their kids to see Mr. Peabody and Sherman, but not the Muppets.
Yeah,
I don't understand this at all.
Yeah, I mean, well, I don't like either of them really, but
right.
But I mean, Mr. Peabody, I wanted to slap nuns. After I saw that movie, because you're just messing with my childhood, man. That's not
yeah,
cool.
I know.
That's just
not
cool.
Not good.
No. Well, I was surprised. Man, I got to tell you, I was really surprised at the numbers because I do box office every Monday morning on my show.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I thought it was going to do probably like mid 20s.
That's what I thought. I thought easily it would do like 25 mil. I thought for sure. What did it do? 16?
Sell 17.
17.
Man, yeah.
Wow. And that Divergent did some business.
It did business. It's not that impressive of a number, though, I don't think.
Well, what did it make? Like 60?
56.
56 million?
Yeah. I mean, it's a big number, but...
Well, the Hunger Games movies make like $100 million their opening weekend.
Over 150.
For God's sake.
The first, they made it both 150. So
that's insane.
So compared to those, yeah, anything's going to come up short. But I think there have been other movies. I mean, that have done much better. That I think the Lionsgate and Summer were hoping for. I think they were hoping at least 65-70.
Don't you think that there's a point now? We're getting to the point now where this we're just being oversaturated with these teen novel things. I mean, don't you think people aren't there? Don't you think there's a certain contingency of people who are like, all right, I'm done.
I think so, and I think not just that, but I think, I was looking over, like, what's coming out this summer. I think you're going to see some very interesting box office numbers this summer. Maybe it's just me, but it seems like there's a lot of stuff coming out this summer that people are just going to be like, yeah, okay, enough. Just exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
You know, another Spider-Man movie, I know Godzilla looks pretty cool.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I know it does. But that's you and me, and not, the three of us, most people go like, oh, geez, another Godzilla movie. Another
yeah,
X-Men
but this
movie,
is a, this
another
is a,
Transformers movie.
The X-Men movie looks pretty cool, though. And
yeah,
if it's,
that one looks fine.
And if it's as good as First, because I still think First Class is the best X-Men movie of them all. I
tend to agree with that.
I thought, Colin, you like First Class?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I really thought it was great.
I like it, but I still don't care about another X-Men movie.
Yeah.
I never loved
an X-Men movie.
Yeah.
Well, and we just had a Wolverine movie, too, last summer.
Yeah, and I don't really – it's not possible for me to care less about the Spider-Man movie, especially after that last one. I thought the last one just sucked.
Yeah.
And I said, Jamie Foxx, man, come on.
And Paul Giamatti.
Well, I love him.
I know.
But he's like a rhino in it, right? He's like the rhino dude.
Whatever that means.
Yeah, I think he's Rhino Man or whatever.
I don't even know what that means, man.
He's a villain named the Rhino, I think.
Yeah, the bulk of the Spider-Man villains were used up in the Raimi's versions. That's the extent of my Spider-Man villain knowledge.
Yeah, well, there were 15 of them in the third Spider-Man movie.
Right.
all right. Well, we'll see what happens when this stuff comes out. I'll tell you, man. I think the Godzilla movie looks fantastic. I cannot wait. And Toho produced it, for God's sake, so it's real. It's real. It's not like that Roland Emmerich piece of crap from how long? 98.
Yep.
What a terrible movie that was.
First movie I ever actively booed in the theater.
It was awful. It was absolutely awful. But this one looks so cool, man. And you know what? Here's another thing about it. Who's got the cojones to use the monolith sound from 2001 in the trailer?
I haven't seen the new trailer yet.
The trailer
they use
the monolith sound, the sound from the monolith in 2001.
Really?
Yeah, man.
Okay.
It's like, you got a lot of nerve, man. You must be very confident in your movie if you're going to be putting one of the most distinctive audio sounds in the history of cinema on your trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, man.
Very effective. Very effective.
Very effective. Yeah, man. It looks so good. I cannot wait for Godzilla. That's May, right?
May 16th.
Oh, please. All right. Well, what the hell, man? Let's do these on-demand movies. The first one. Is The Boys of Abu Ghraib.
Yeah.
And this stars my future ex-wife, Sarah Paxton.
It does. She's not one of the boys, though.
No. Clearly.
No, she's waiting for one of the boys back home.
Uh-huh.
But the American soldier deployed at Abu Ghraib finds himself behind the walls of the infamous hard site, where he develops a secret friendship with an Iraqi detainee.
Mm.
So Sarah Paxton co-stars, Sean Astin, John Hurd's in it, and a bunch of other people that I'm not familiar with.
All right. And it's on demand, but it's also at one theater.
Mm-hmm.
In Countryside.
Yes.
So there you go. By the way, I'm looking at the lovely Sarah Paxton's IMDb page.
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
She's got like six more movies coming out.
Yeah, she's in demand.
She works a lot. By the way, if you've not seen Cheap Thrills, for God's sake.
Yeah, get on it.
Oh, man. And Colin, you still haven't seen it, right?
I still haven't seen it. I'm getting on it. Don't worry.
Oh.
I'll be there.
It hits theaters. It plays the music box on April 11th. So if you're not going to, you know, I would even recommend just waiting and going to see it at the music box.
Well, see, the thing is, I'm going because I want to see it with an audience.
Yeah.
I watched it on my couch and, you know,
yeah.
And was freaking out.
It's a good audience
just
movie.
Oh, my God. You know, there's stuff that happens in Cheap Thrills where the audience is just going to go nuts.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be fun. Maybe I'll see that on a Friday night at midnight.
There you go.
Yeah, man. All right, we got to take a quick break. That was quick. And then we'll come back. We'll talk more about the on-demand features that are available for everybody to enjoy or not enjoy. And that's coming up with Colin and Eric. It's movie review time right here on 720 WGN. Yeah, man. Nick DiGilio, that's me. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio right here overlooking Michigan Avenue. Here till midnight when the lovely Amy Guth comes in for a Red Eye Remix. Movie review time, as we do every Saturday night starting at 10:30. Colin and Eric join me and we review all the movies for you, on-demand movies and theatrical movies. Here is Colin and Eric.
Hello.
Hello, guys.
Hello.
All righty then. We're going down the list of on-demand movies. Hide Your Smiling Faces is the next one.
Yeah, this is a film that actually played at Chicago International Film Festival last October. After a neighborhood tragedy, two adolescent brothers confront changing relationships, the mystery of nature, and their own mortality. I heard very good things about this film. A lot of people who I knew saw it came back with a lot of praise for it.
Okay.
So.
Hide Your Smiling Faces, played the Chicago International Film Festival, available on demand right now. All right, now the next one, Eric, you have seen.
I have.
Tell us about it.
This one is called Maladies, and it played Toronto International Film Festival last year. I'll read the description just because I've tried to put this movie out of memory. A talented and successful actor retires at a young age due to a perceived mental illness. Now living in a small town with his deranged sister and his best friend, we watch as their maladies intertwine. And do you notice the writer-director there, Nick? Do you see the IMDb page?
It just says Carter.
Just says Carter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Am I supposed to know who that is?
No.
Oh, it's just some dude named Carter?
Just some dude named Carter. And he's also listed in the cast. Carter plays Officer Carter in the film. Yeah, here's the thing: is that the cast is nothing to sneeze at. We're talking James Franco, Catherine Keener, David Strathairn, and this is one of those movies that just wants to approach being sort of odd and quirky, but trying to take itself way too seriously at the same time. So you have a lot of scenes where the characters are sort of interacting but not really doing anything.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's just one of these movies. It's so bad and off-putting, you would have thought Franco directed it himself.
Uh-huh.
And if you've seen any of other Franco's movies, it's actually worse than those movies.
Wow.
Yeah, so
okay.
I mean, even with actors like that, and it seems like, and because Franco's playing a guy that was on like General Hospital, you know.
Oh, okay.
So it's like it's almost, you know, it's like it was sort of like weird reality type shifting thing where, you know, is he playing himself or is he playing a character? Like, who knows? But it's awful, and you shouldn't watch it or waste your time.
Maladies, directed by the one and only Carter.
Carter.
All right. Now, Colin, you saw the next one.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us?
All right. Well, Mistaken for Strangers. This is a documentary about the band The National, which is a band that over the past 10 years or so has kind of received the same mainstream recognitions that other bands like Arcade Fire and the Black Keys have received. You know, they've sort of peaked at around the same time. Still peaking, I guess. Mm. And they're about to go, in this film, they're about to go on their biggest tour yet, a tour that took place in 2010. And the band is made up of five guys, four of whom are brothers, meaning two sets of two brothers. The lead singer has a brother, but he still lives in Cincinnati with his mother. And Berninger, the lead singer, invites his little brother Tom to join them on this tour as a roadie. But Tom is, he's a budding filmmaker, sort of a horror filmmaker, not a very good one, and kind of a lost soul, kind of a man-child who, you know, only listens to heavy metal and thinks that this tour is going to be all about partying and getting into drunken stupors.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to film all of it. Problem is, this is an indie rock band, and the work is taken very seriously, and, you know, nothing could be further from that perception. He has to be a roadie, he has to be responsible, and responsibility is something that's sort of eluded him all his life.
Okay, Colin, hang on, because we got to hit the news, but I want to hear what you think of the movie. It's called Mistaken for Strangers, and we've got more movies to talk about coming up after the news, which is next on WGN. Yeah, man. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, and we're reviewing movies. We're here till midnight tonight, and then the lovely Amy Guth will be in for Red Eye Remix. Colin and Eric are with me. They join me every week to review the movies. We did not get a chance to see Cesar Chavez. If you saw that movie and you want to review it for us, our phone lines are open at 312-981-7200. And let's get back to the reviews. Colin, you were telling us about Mistaken for Strangers, a documentary about the band The National.
Right. So the deal is the band is going on tour, and the lead singer, Matt Berninger, has hired his brother, or invited his brother Tom to come with them on tour to be a roadie. And Tom has other plans. He wants to make a documentary. Problem is, he's really inept at being both a documentary filmmaker and a roadie. He can't seem to really, you know, make strike a balance or be responsible or, you know, do anything but drive everybody crazy. So when I say he's an inept filmmaker and you look at the IMDb page, you say, well, he directed this film. You might think that this is probably not a very good movie, except it's a great movie. It's not just a great movie about touring and not just a great movie about brotherly love, but also a great movie about the act of creating something on your own and not just riding the coattails of others, which was, you know, Tom's original plan all along, pretty much in life. You know, his brother, Matt, you know, it's basically a full-time job for Matt Berninger to be a lead singer of a rock band and also looking after his brother and trying to keep, you know, his self-esteem up. So you think you kind of, when you watch this movie, you kind of know, you think you know where it's going, but where it does end up, I think is pretty remarkable. It's a sad film. It's a funny film, painfully funny at times. You know, you're just kind of wincing through a lot of it. It accomplishes so much in 75 minutes. So I highly recommend this movie. It's one of my favorite movies of the year so far.
Wow. All right. Mistaken for Strangers. It's available on
yeah.
demand.
And I believe it opens at Facets next week.
Okay. We'll keep an eye out for that, Mistaken for Strangers. All right. And then the last on-demand movie, Eric. The Protector 2.
Yeah, and this is the latest film starring Tony Jaa from the Ong Bak series. And the description reads, once again, Kam's pet elephant has been abducted,
yep.
and he must fight anyone in his way to find him.
Where is my elephant?
Which is weird, because I think in one of the Ong Bak movies, or maybe more than one of them, I think there's a pet elephant, or there's an elephant involved.
Oh, yeah, there is.
There is?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so Tony Jaa just brings
he likes
his
elephants.
Own elephant.
He likes elephants.
Okay.
Can I just mention that there is a chick in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Chicha Yanin.
Okay.
And I saw the trailer for The Protector 2. Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to it. I'm gonna order it on demand. I didn't have time
mm-hmm.
to watch it. I love Tony Jaa's movies. Those movies kick ass. And I saw her in this trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, who is this chick? And then I went online and I watched about 5 hours worth of fights.
Yeah.
Unbelievable, this chick.
She's the one from Chocolate?
Yeah.
Okay, I've seen Chocolate.
Oh.
Yeah.
She's
something.
She rules, man. Chicha Yanin is her name. And I don't even know what to say. This is another future ex-wife of mine right here. She's unbelievable. She can really, she can kick some ass. So look her up. It's spelled J-E-E-J-A-Y-A-N-I-N, but it's pronounced Chicha. So it's
mm-hmm.
J-E-E-J-A, and then the last name is Y-A-I-N. And just look her up on YouTube, man. There's like hours of scenes and fights on YouTube, and I spent a good portion of an afternoon once just watching her beat the crap out of guys. So
good times.
Yeah, man. So the Protector 2, I'm looking forward to it. You know what to expect. Where's my elephant? I'm going to bust your head open. Hey, when does the Raid 2 open here? I've been seeing the commercial. They're really saturating the commercials on television now.
Next week.
It opens. Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a special girl in that movie, too.
Okay.
Hammer Girl.
Hey, all right, man. Listen, man, that movie's going to rule. I know you saw it already.
Mm-hmm.
Is it opening wide?
No, not really.
No?
No.
It'll probably be at River East, though, right? It'll probably be right down the street?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
Yeah, it'll be downtown.
Yeah, man. I can't wait. I cannot wait. It's going to be so awesome. All right, so those are the on-demand things. Eric, why don't you tell us about Rob the Mob?
Okay. This is a film is based on a true story. This is a young couple, New York couple, played by Michael Pitt and Nina Arianda. And there's a young couple in love. Michael Pitt's character does some petty crime at the beginning of the movie, gets arrested. And as he gets out, his girls kind of walk the straight and narrow path. But he's, not quite adjusting to back to society. And one day he goes to the John Gotti trial, which is happening at this time. And through the course of the John Gotti trial, he discovers these social clubs that are run by the local mobsters, some under the Gotti rule of whatnot. And he decides, knowing that there's no guns allowed in these clubs, but a lot of spare cash, that he's going to rob them and set him and his lady up, hopefully for life. So he begins setting, robbing these clubs, and he's, clearly not very good at it. He's a little inept, and it leaves, the first, third of this movie, with him pulling these robberies and the sort of the kind of Bonnie and Clyde lifestyle that they're about to lead. It leads to some potentially really, fun and interesting stuff. Then the movie really starts to bog itself down with one subplot after another. There's a whole subplot involving different members of the mob, including one played by Andy Garcia. Then there's a newspaper reporter played by Ray Romano. And then there's the FBI agents who are investigating everyone involved in this entire thing, one of them played by Frank Whaley. And the movie really just loses its focus and its energy, because it really starts to get very self-serious about itself. Like, it really thinks it's like, you know, instead of just having, you know, a little fun with the story and being a little goofy about it, it really gets very, it doesn't try to go like the, you know, as far as like editing a Scorsese film, but it's really trying to sort of capture that kind of flavor. And it really, it just loses complete focus by the second half of the movie, to the point where I didn't know which subplot I was really supposed to be caring about, because the other ones really begin to dominate what's, you know, over the two young lovers, which is the story that I started to grasp onto. So I can't recommend this movie. It was really unfortunate because I thought it started with a lot of promise.
Okay. Rob the Mob. Okay. All right. Hang on, you guys. And when we come back, we got more movies to review. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And if you saw Cesar Chavez, you want to review that, call us up. 312-981-7200. More movie reviews coming up right here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio here until midnight, and we're reviewing the new movies. We've got Eric and Colin here. Colin, welcome back. And
hello.
Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, Eric, let's talk about Jodorowsky's Dune.
Yeah, this is another film I saw at Toronto last year.
Yeah.
People who might, you know, may or may not be familiar with Alejandro Jodorowsky, is very famous for doing some these surrealistic films, westerns, El Topo and The Holy Mountain. Back in the 1970s, he was very intent on making an adaptation of Frank Herbert's Dune. And, you know, we all know the David Lynch film, but this was to be done several years before that. This is a project that has been known in some circles for many years, but this documentary sort of takes you on the journey and sort of inside the sort of not-so-secret binder that contains all the sketches and ideas and scripts. All the scripts for this particular project, and it seems like it'd be like the greatest insane movie that never got made. Because it's a film that, I mean, he literally wanted to have like different composers for every single planet in the story. He talks about all these different ideas that he had and how to film certain aspects of the story, which in an amazing sort of turn of events, you see how these ideas have actually come to fruition in other science fiction movies that actually did get made over the years. It's pretty amazing. Anyone who has any sort of interest in just filmmaking and filmmaking history or just the process of making movies is going to have a lot of fun with this film, just as because Jodorowsky, he's a presence. He's just a lot of fun to hear talk, and you know all his ideas. And there are a lot of talking heads in between some people that he was even in touch with at the time that he wanted. He wanted Orson Welles to be involved in this thing. Pink Floyd was going to be one of his composers. It's a really fun documentary for anyone who loves movies.
Yeah, I love this movie. I love it. Colin, you have to see it.
Yeah, I'm probably going to go tomorrow. I can't wait.
You really have to see it. This is a great film. And wow, what a nutcase of a movie that would have been.
Yep.
I mean, my God. And, you know, I'm a big fan of his movies. Obviously, I love El Topo. I love The Holy Mountain. But I love Santa Sangre. I love that movie. It's absolutely insane. I didn't know about this. I had no idea that this was... You know, that he was associated with Dune and spent so much time, you know, trying to get this movie made. I had no idea. You know, what was really nice to see on screen again is what the hell ever happened to Richard Stanley? You remember Richard Stanley?
No.
Richard Stanley did two great science fiction movies. One called Hardware.
Okay.
And the other, Dust Devil.
I've seen both of those.
That guy is, yeah. He was, Hardware is a kick-ass movie. And he shows up in this thing, and I haven't seen him. And then he had, H.R. Geiger. Wanted to design all this beautiful stuff that he designed. Amazing. You get to see it. It's beautiful. This is a fun movie. It's great. And Colin, this is a movie that's made for people who love movies.
Yeah. So can't wait.
You got to see it. It's really terrific. I think it's just great. All right, Colin, why don't you enjoy us and tell us about the Sabotage?
Sabotage.
Right. I say Sabotage.
I say Sabotage. You say Sabotage.
That's right.
All right. This is the latest action film with Schwarzenegger, and in this one he plays a member of an elite DEA squad, the members of which are also played by Sam Worthington, Terrence Howard, Josh Holloway, and Marielle Enyos. And they all have nicknames like Monster, Neck, and Grinder. So at the start of the film, these guys are going in and invading a big drug cartel's headquarters where they find a huge stack of cash. And as part of police procedure, they take some of the cash and burn the rest, but then suddenly that cash that they took is missing. Right there on the scene, it just disappears. Could have been one of the agents going rogue, maybe. That's the big mystery in this movie. But then suddenly these agents start getting killed off one by one, rather mysteriously. And, of course, everyone is denying that they know what's going on. And meanwhile, an investigator played by Olivia Williams and her partner, they're tailing Schwarzenegger and his team because they're all under suspicion of stealing this money and something else might be going on. So this is a movie that is sort of designed to keep you guessing who done it. Problem is, most of these characters are pretty much interchangeable, and they have very little explained about them as to why they would need to steal this money and kill everyone. They all get tattoos at the same place, they all talk tough the same way, and they all treat women like props when they walk through the door. So they're really no different from a collection of, horny teenagers in a Friday the 13th movie whom you just wait to see get killed off.
Okay, and again, I'm sorry, Colin, hold on. We got to hit the news again, and then
I knew that was coming.
Yep, you got to hold on, and we will we'll definitely get back to this. We're talking about Sabotage, and we will get the full review and all that good stuff coming up after we take a break for the news. And the news is next on WGN. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studios. We're doing movie reviews. We get back to the movie reviews in a second. Roger, I hate to correct you, but the Hawks will not be playing the Pittsburgh Penguins in the first round of the playoffs, because if they were playing the Penguins, that would mean that they were going for the Cup. They're playing the Penguins tomorrow. It's a regular season game.
Regular game.
Mm-hmm. The first round of the playoffs for the Hawks is going to be April 16th. And more than likely, they'll play the Avalanche. So,
guess what?
Yes.
Yeah, I got excited.
Yes, you did. I just wanted to make sure that everybody
was
clear.
Yeah, I
hope they play the Penguins because that means they would be playing for the Stanley Cup.
And you know why I got excited? Because the game tomorrow, which I just said twice, was in the same release from the Hawks as them making the postseason.
Right.
And so,
but the first game will be April 16th. The actual playoffs will start on the 16th of April.
Got it.
And more than likely, they're going to play the Avalanche in the first round. So that's. I just wanted to make sure that we got it. Okay.
I just got so excited.
I got you.
And I'm the March 30th. I'm thinking, wow, that's March.
That's tomorrow.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah. All right. I just wanted to make sure we got that straight. Okay. We got to get back to the movies. We were talking with Colin and Eric. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hawks made the postseason. Outstanding.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Colin?
Yeah?
You were telling us about Sabotage, the latest Arnold Schwarzenegger epic.
Yeah. He's a DA agent, and he and his merry band of misfits are under investigation because one of them may have stolen some money from a crime scene, and they're all getting killed one by one, and nobody knows what's going on.
Yeah, man.
There's your plot. This is a much gorier movie than I was expecting. It's much gorier than a movie like this usually gets. It's incredibly violent. And it comes to us from David Ayer, who's known for writing and directing gritty cop dramas. You know, he wrote Training Day, he wrote and directed Harsh Times and End of Watch, and those are all very good films. But it's also co-written by the guy who did Live Free or Die Hard and Swordfish, and that might be the problem. This movie is so ridiculous and over the top on one hand, but then, you know, gritty and serious when it wants to be on the other. And it's never quite sure what it wants to be. I will say it's never boring. It is kind of fun to hear Arnold's line readings. I think Monster, no, is my favorite. But it's never quite, good enough. It's never quite fun enough. It's never quite bad fun enough to really recommend. So this is another misfire for Arnold Schwarzenegger, who is on quite the losing streak these days.
Yeah. All right. And Eric.
Ooh, yeah. This film is an absolute mess. As Colin mentioned, the sort of the personalities of this DEA team. You know, for the personalities that are on display, such unpleasant personalities and such bombastic personalities that each of them are supposed to have, it's amazing just how little personality any of them really have, especially when considering that, you know, maybe we should be picking one out over the other, over who might be involved in this, you know, what's going on with this, you know, the killings and whatnot. The film's not even sure if it's supposed to be a mystery at times. I mean, when we get to sort of the big revelations at the end of the movie, they're so nonchalant. You kind of let go, was I supposed to be guessing or what? Both of the women characters in this film are written to a point that the both actresses are pretty much embarrass themselves. It's kind of unappealing to watch both of them be so bad in this film. And Ayer, you know, he tries to do some stuff to make the film, like, stand out above the, sort of the ridiculousness of the plot. There's some time-lapse stuff going on through certain sequences. The bloodshed, obviously, is very amped up. But, you know, maybe, you know, this is what happens, I guess, when you take, you know, David Ayer's characters out of a car. And have to move around a bit. I don't know what this film wanted to be, was supposed to be. Having Schwarzenegger, you know, his line reads are very entertaining. You know, they all belong on an app somewhere. But at certain times he's called upon to be sort of very serious and almost introspective at times, and that certainly doesn't work. This is an absolute mess. And of all, you know, the sort of the recent Schwarzenegger comeback films, this is by far the worst.
Yeah, I was real disappointed with this one because I was looking forward to it, and it's stupid as hell. And I didn't expect it to be like a whodunit. I wasn't aware. I mean, I saw the Red Band trailer, and I kind of went nuts because, you know, the violence in this movie is completely over the top, and I thought it was going to be. But judging from the Red Band trailer, I thought it was just going to be just a lot of good gory fun. But it's a schizophrenic movie. I mean, it really is. At times, it is that over-the-top, you know, ridiculousness, and the violence is just way out of control. But then, like you said, Eric, there are these moments where it's supposed to be serious and, you know, introspective and all that stuff, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work at all. There are a lot of people in the cast that I really like. I'm a huge fan of Miro Enos, and it was nice to see her actually do something, different. And actually, her hair, she had her hair down a few times in the movie. Because during the entire series of the killing, she had her hair back in a... But I like her a lot, you know, and she was... at least she had more to do in this than she did in that stupid zombie thing, the World War Z thing.
That's true.
But Schwarzenegger's just, you know, not making... Is he got more stuff on tap for us?
He's got a zombie movie coming out.
Oh, for God's sake.
Yeah, it's a zombie movie, and then he's got four sequels, basically. There's an Expendables, there's a Conan, there's a, you know, a Triplets, the Twins, whatever.
Oh, God.
Happen, and another Terminator movie.
They're doing another Terminator movie?
Yeah, they're sort of rebooting it.
Oh, God. I mean, wait, he's not going to play the Terminator, is he?
That's what I'm hearing.
What?
A Terminator.
Yeah. Because, I mean, he appeared in that stupid McG movie.
His likeness was used, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he shows up and... Didn't he show up like naked or something and fight?
Yeah, that was the fight. Sam Worthington uncovers him, and I don't know how much what he did with it, but they used his face,
right?
And they created a younger version of Schwarzenegger. Right.
I totally
fight
forgot
Sam Worthington.
I totally forgot Sam Worthington was in that.
Yeah, like most movies, Sam Worthington's in.
So they're reunited. I bet people were very excited about this reunion. Of Sam Worthington and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, to the tune of $5 million at the box office this weekend.
Man, not good.
Nope.
Not good. So Escape Plan didn't make any money either.
No.
And what
and
was
Last
it?
Stand made even less.
Last Stand, actually, I didn't hate.
I don't hate it either.
I thought
I don't
Last
hate actually, Plan either.
I thought Last Plan was actually kind of, or Last Stand was actually kind of fun.
This is actually inflation-wise, Sabotage is going to be the worst film box office-wise of Schwarzenegger's career.
Wow, man.
I'm talking less, you know, I'm talking inflation here, less than Red Sonja.
Red Sonja, oh, man. Mm-hmm. I had totally forgotten about Reds. Didn't Richard Fleischer direct that?
He did.
Oh, man.
Memories.
Yeah, Richard Fleischer. He was like 80 when he directed that, and when he directed the two Conan. Well, he did one, he did the Destroyer, and then he did Red Sonja. Yeah. Oh, man. All right. Well, Schwarzenegger, I don't know. Did he make a better governor? I don't know. I'm not really sure. But, you know, David Ayer is a guy whose work I really like. And I find this very, 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 very disappointing coming from him. I didn't realize, Colin, that the guy who wrote Live Free or Die Hard. And then what was the other one you said he did?
Swordfish.
Oh.
And there's a third one, too, but those are the two that I mentioned.
Oh, man.
You did write the A-Team.
That's right.
Oh, I like the A-Team. The A-Team's good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, Sabotage, not good. Not good at all. Well, let's take a quick break. We come back. We've got Noah to talk about. I just lost Eric. I'm just an idiot. Eric, call back. All right, we'll take a quick break when we come back. Darren Aronofsky's new story of the Ark and the Flood and the Noah coming up right after this on 720 WGN. Oh, yeah. All right. We got one more movie to review here. It's Nick DiGilio. We are in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Eric and Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
Eric, Noah.
Yeah. Well, it's the story of Noah's Ark,
mm-hmm.
you know, depending on who you listen to. But this is Darren Aronofsky's passion project, basically, he's been thinking about since he was 13. And it's the story of Noah, and Russell Crowe plays Noah, and he gets some visions from the creator, letting him know that basically the world is going to be underwater pretty soon, so he better build an ark and get his family out of there and get all the animals and all the creatures on board so they can survive and possibly repopulate the world in the image that the creator, would like. But there are forces out there that like to get on that arc too, and represented by Ray Winstone, and he's sort of the king, descendants of Cain, who basically are representing the wickedness of man. The creator is out to destroy. So everyone knows the story of Noah's Ark. Aaron Ofsky's interpretation of it is a really fascinating one. You know, people are going to hear words like rock monsters when, you know, in fact, there are fallen angels that are, you know, represented in the Bible and the Dead Sea Scrolls, that the creature, these fallen angels are helping man and helping Noah build this ark and are instrumental in their escape. But, you know, beyond the spectacle and everything we know or thought we know or thought we knew about the Noah's Ark tale, this fits right in with sort of Aronofsky's filmography, and it's the idea of people, you know, searching for, you know, sort of a type of transcendence through the, you know, of, you know, various things. You know, there have been drugs and fame and, you know, forgiveness and all these kind of things. And there's a lot of very interesting thematic elements in the story that make it worthwhile more than your sort of average television movie of the week spectacle that we've seen Noah done into a few times. The idea, you know, the question that people rarely ask is, you know, why would God want to destroy man? And the sort of the question, the lingering questions that Noah has to deal with in that, you know, maybe they're supposed to die too. And the choices that he has to make on this journey during the 40 days and 40 nights of rain. I mean, this is a really powerful, really challenging film that I was, no pun intended, completely on board with from the beginning, right up till the end. I was moved by it. I was shaken. I think this is one of the best, very best films of the year.
Okay. Colin?
Yeah, this is a pretty terrific movie, and it's definitely it definitely has a director's stamp on it. I mean, Derek was talking about some of the themes that Aronofsky has touched on, and, you know, for me, all these movies are about people who are pushing themselves to the limit, usually physically, and this one fits right in. Only this one, you know, Russell Crowe, you know, Noah is pushed to the limit spiritually. It is not your typical Hollywood blockbuster epic, although it certainly looks like one, and it certainly looks like a Lord of the Rings type of movie. But it's big, it's theatrical, and it's ambitious. And, you know, there are sequences here, such as, you know, the creation of the universe, you know, a stream of water that travels the world and lures all the animals to the ark, that are done in a sort of stop-motion animation style that is really breathtaking. And it's, you know, sort of a, it's a great brushstroke for a sequence that few directors can get away with. It demands to be seen on the big screen. My only gripe, I guess, with the movie is I kind of wish somebody else was cast in it besides Russell Crowe. He's always been one of these actors who sort of keeps the audience at arm's length. Whereas someone like, you know, Willem Dafoe in Last Temptation of Christ, I felt like I was on that journey with him, and I think this is a film that is reaching for that level of biblical storytelling. Budget aside, it's the same kind of movie that, you know, depicts a sign of God or the Creator is as much of a torment as it is a blessing. But with Pro, and beneath all the hair and all the gruffness, I can never quite connect with him. But as far as everything else goes, I mean, this is a really great piece of epic adventure filmmaking and works on many different levels, and I do highly recommend it.
I do, too. I think it's great. Aronofsky, man, he just makes great movies. And this one, at least the way I felt about it, the way I was emotionally reacted to, reminded me a lot of how I reacted to The Fountain. Which I think is one of his best, most underrated, and wildly ambitious movies. And I felt the same sort of emotion while I was watching Noah as I did when I watched The Fountain. It is big. It's beautiful. It's incredible to look at. Everybody in it is really good, and it's very original. It's striking, and I was feeling a little bit uneasy about this movie with all the stories, and you know what I mean? And they seem to be hiding it from the critics, and and so I walked in, you know, not expecting greatness, but it's Darren Aronofsky, man. I'm trying to think if he's ever made it. Has he ever made a bad movie? I mean,
well, Maybe not in your eyes. No. I don't think he's made a bad movie. I have some issues with Black Swan, but this is a movie that made me want to go back and revisit The Fountain, which I was a bit mixed on at the time.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, I know there are a lot of people. I think there's sort of a mixed reaction to that film. The people that love it really love it.
Oh,
like
yeah.
You guys do.
I'm one of those guys. Yeah. Colin, you liked it, right?
That's my favorite Aronofsky movie.
I think it's just a stunning. Yeah. I think it's a stunning movie. And I remember people were like, "Oh, it's confusing. It doesn't make any sense." To me, it's a very simple film. It's about dealing with death. That's what The Fountain is about. And the originality on display in that movie, and the originality on display in this. I mean, because this is not your typical Noah's Ark story at all. It's done beautifully. It's a terrific movie, and I think everybody should see it. It's doing well.
It's having a great weekend. I really hope that people, you know, listen to people who are a lot more thoughtful about this, like maybe the three of us.
Yeah.
And as opposed to just listening to people who are grasping on to certain things that haven't seen the film. I actually disagree with Colin about Russell Crowe. I think this is the strongest performance, most interesting performance he's given since maybe Cinderella Man.
Oh, I agree with you on that.
Yeah.
I think he's great.
I think Jennifer Connelly has some great scenes in the movie.
Yeah.
None of that extra stuff bothered me about it, because I think it opens up. Because the idea of fallen angels come down to help man, and God punishes them and makes them one with the sort of the rotten earth that they've created. That's an interesting idea.
That's a great
in
idea.
Of itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad Jennifer Connelly didn't get mistreated in this Aronofsky movie like she did in the last 10 minutes of that damn.
Well, I heard that was cut out of this one. There was a scene with the rock monster.
Yeah, I bet there was. Okay, so we heard we got The Raid 2 next week. What else?
We got Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
Oh, yes.
Next week. And we have Nymphomaniac Volume 2.
Oh, brother.
Opens in theaters. Although it's on demand right now.
Okay. All right. We talked about that one last week. All right. Eric, Colin, thank you guys very much. And obviously, we all three of us highly recommend that you go see Noah.
Yes. Yep.
All right, guys. Take care. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks.
All right. There they go. That's Colin and Eric. And, yeah, they'll join me again next week for movie reviews.